Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Anthony Brooks, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It was a central promise of Donald Trump's presidential campaign, a deportation force that would crack down on illegal immigration from south of the U.S. border. Now the Department of Homeland Security has unveiled the battle plan, thousands of new federal agents to enforce it, and sweeping guidelines that widen the pool of those eligible for immediate deportation. This hour on Point in our 100-day spotlight, President Trump's immigration enforcement plan and what it means to the communities most affected. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Will this solve what the administration says is a significant national security problem? Does it secure our borders or make American immigrant communities less safe and more afraid? Joining us now via Skype from Miami, Florida, is Alan Gomez, immigration reporter for USA Today. He's been following the response to the executive orders on immigration and enforcement President Trump signed on January 25th, and which we learned a lot more about yesterday. Alan Gomez, welcome to On Point. It's good to have you.
Thanks for having me, Anthony.
So, Alan, of course, President Trump campaigned on cracking down on illegal immigration. He laid out most of this back on January 25th in executive orders. So in many ways, a lot of this was expected, and yet it has surprised, shocked lots of people. What's new and different about what was unveiled yesterday, about what we learned yesterday?
Yeah, and just I think a lot of that shock is that stems from the people who, after the election, were saying, hey, he's not going to do all of this. Let's all calm down. He's not going to go as far as he said. You know, a lot of what he's saying is hyperbole, a bit of exaggeration. But when it comes to this issue, what he signed in his executive orders on January 25th and what was in those Department of Homeland Security memorandums released yesterday pretty much lay out everything he's talked about on the campaign and then some. So in here, we have everything. We have the border wall. We have hiring more ICE agents, hiring more Border Patrol agents, building more prisons to hold undocumented immigrants. But as you mentioned, there are things in here that are above and beyond what any of us expected. That includes a wide array of things, from deputizing local police to not only act as immigration agents, but to act as Border Patrol agents. There is a provision that says people coming who are caught along the southwest border will no longer be held in detention in the U.S. while their cases are resolved in immigration court, but they will actually be sent back to Mexico, whether they're from there or not. There is going to be a rapid increase in what they call expedited removals, which is a situation where an immigration agent can deport you from the country without the person, that undocumented immigrant, going before a judge. And again, just a lot of things in here that are above and beyond anything that he talked about on the campaign trail.
Right. And Alan, explain to us a little more about how these orders expand the pool of folks that could be deported. How does that work? I mean, can you put that in perspective, maybe even with some numbers? What do these orders do?
Absolutely. So one common thread between President Obama and President Trump is that under both those administrations, the Department of Homeland Security said that their main target for their limited deportation dollars are undocumented immigrants who have a criminal background, who have been convicted of crimes, who are gang members, who otherwise pose a threat to national security. What's changed now and what's been memorialized in Trump's executive order and those memos yesterday is that now the people who are considered enforcement priorities, the people they will target for deportation, also include people who've only been charged with a crime. In other words, just arrested and charged with a crime. People who an immigration agent determines has conducted an act that would constitute a deportable offense. So you can be charged with a crime, you can be convicted of a crime, or ICE on their own can determine whether you've done something that they think is deportable.
So merely suspected of a crime, in other words.
Exactly. That's, yeah. If they have probable cause to believe that you've done something, then that should be enough. And on top of that, the other thing is, aside that pool is already a very, very massive one. They're also going after people who have used fake Social Security numbers over the years. So it's already an incredibly big pool that encompasses a majority of the undocumented immigrant population. But the last thing that they also did was, if ICE is on a is on a mission, if they're going after, let's say, a couple of convicted murderers who are in the country illegally, and along the way they encounter other undocumented immigrants whose only violation is their immigration violation, they can be picked up too and deported as well. So that's why it's hard to put a number on it, but I think it's safe to say that the vast majority of undocumented immigrants in this country are now at risk of deportation.
Alan Gomez, immigration reporter for USA Today, stay with us. I want to play some tape from yesterday at the White House press briefing where Press Secretary Sean Spicer was asked about the message the administration is trying to send with the new Department of Homeland Security guidelines for immigration enforcement.
The message from this White House and from the DHS is that those people who are in this country and pose a threat to our public safety or have committed a crime will be the first to go, and we will be aggressively making sure that that occurs.
Now, Alan Gomez, Sean Spicer also said, I'm not quoting exactly here, but he sort of tried to tamp down the concerns that there were going to be mass deportations. And the administration has been suggesting that that's not the point here. And by the way, we don't have the means to do that, even if we wanted to do that. Can you put that into some perspective? Is that a message that is somehow calming concerns about this being taken seriously? What's your take on that?
Well, I mean, Sean Spicer was asked directly if this is a blueprint for mass deportation, and he said no. But then very quickly followed up saying that, yes, if you're in this country in violation of our immigration laws, you may be deported. I think what we're going to see is, right, they cannot just round up 11 million people. That's, you know, even over the course of 4 or 8 years, I think that's just practically impossible. But what changes is who they choose to deport. So, for example, I looked at all the deportation raids under President Obama in his last year in office, and 90% of the people who were arrested in more than a dozen raids, 90% of them had some sort of criminal conviction on their record. Under the first raid conducted by ICE under President Trump a couple of weeks ago, that number was down to 74%, meaning that they're starting to bring in a lot of other people who are not necessarily convicted criminals or who are these big threats to national security. Whatever's coming out of the White House, whatever Sean Spicer's talking about, as much as Trump talks about trying to deal with some of these undocumented immigrants with heart, I can tell you, to answer your question about whether this is calming the immigrant community out there, it absolutely is not. People there are seeing already examples of people who would not have been deported under Obama, but who have been deported under President Trump, and seeing that as a sign that this is, as one immigration attorney told me, open hunting season for undocumented immigrants. Communities across the country are really terrified right now. In Corpus Christi last week, there was a panic at a school because they saw a couple of ICE agents out in the neighborhood, and they thought a raid was in the works. ICE actually had to respond with a public statement saying, no, there are no raids planned for today. So the fear and the panic in that immigrant community right now are very real and are manifesting itself all around the country.
Well, Alan Gomez, stand by. I want to introduce from Washington, Avida Mousavian, a policy attorney for the National Immigration Law Center. She's also worked on immigration reform advocacy and state and local enforcement issues in New York, and worked with Families for Freedom and Anti-Deportation Community Organization Network in New York City. Avida Mousavian, welcome back to On Point. It's good to have you.
Thanks so much for having me.
So I'd love to just get your initial response. You work with a lot of groups that serve immigrant communities. What are you hearing? We were talking, just Alan Gomez was talking about how this was immigrant communities were responding. What are you hearing?
I think much of what Alan said is exactly in line with what we're hearing directly from community-based organizations that are directly working with immigrant communities, whether it's educators seeing increased fear in their student population and wanting to address that, healthcare providers seeing, for example, pregnant mothers or mothers of young children afraid to get critical medical services or essential nutrition assistance. People are incredibly fearful, and it's had a very paralyzing effect on communities. Parents afraid to send kids to school. And I think what that speaks to is just the hypocrisy of the administration's position, which it has intentionally tried to foment fear and fear of immigrant communities in general, and then said, you know, please don't panic in response to this blueprint for mass deportation that they have put out and really detailed. I think what amounts to a sea change in our immigration policy. So I think it's disingenuous for the administration to deliberately stoke these fears and essentially to create a feeling of attrition in immigrant communities who feel paralyzed and afraid to participate in everyday activities, which contribute to the economy, which contribute to the thriving of our communities.
Avida Mousavian, what do you say to a lot of people who will, you know, point out that Donald Trump won a closely contested, a very divisive election, but he made no secret that this was what he was going to do. And, you know, whether he won the popular vote or not, he won that election. And now he's carrying out a central promise of his campaign that he campaigned on. He made no secret of this.
Well, to that, I would say there are many of his supporters who didn't necessarily want him to follow through on some of these campaign platforms, or didn't take seriously that he would do it to the scope that he described on the campaign trail. And I think setting that aside, I think the reality is that the majority of Americans want to see our dysfunctional and cruel immigration system reformed. They want to see families and workplaces stay unified, and they want stability in their communities. And when you have an administration that's intent on making people completely afraid and distrustful of what the administration is telling them, I think it's very out of touch with what the American public wants. And I think the reality is he's also emboldened, the president and his administration have emboldened a sense of lack of accountability. And it's essentially given ICE and CBP marching orders to do whatever they want with impunity. And I think that makes all of us at greater risk. If you have people feeling like they can openly profile, they can openly frighten community members, they can make collateral arrests without any consequence.
This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks, and for Tom Ashbrook, immigrants across the country stayed home from work last Thursday as part of a Day Without Immigrants protest. In an interview with the New York Times on that day, Irma Andino, an immigrant from El Salvador, described what going back to her home country would mean for her.
If I went to my country now, I wouldn't even know where to go, what to do. I don't know it. I belong here.
Yesterday, the Department of Homeland Security unveiled sweeping new guidelines for how President Trump's executive orders on immigration and border security will be enforced. You can join the conversation. What's your reaction to this hard line on immigration? Does it fix what many regard as a broken immigration system? Does it make you feel safer? With me from Miami, Florida, Alan Gomez, immigration reporter for USA Today, who's been following this story, and from Washington, Avida Mousavian, policy attorney for the National Immigration Law Center. Avida and Alan, and let me start with you, Alan. Couple of questions. First of all, Alan, how much of this will require congressional approval? For instance, among the things the Trump administration is calling for is the hiring of thousands of new immigration officials. Is that something that he can just do with a stroke of a pen, or does Congress have to sign on to this?
No, Congress absolutely needs to sign on to that. There are some, you know, within the orders, they call for Immigration Customs Enforcement, for Border Patrol to sort of reallocate money that's already been assigned to them. But to get 10,000 new ICE agents, just doing some basic math, looking at some past budget requests, I mean, we're talking possibly up to $2 billion to hire those. To add 5,000 more Border Patrol, that could be another billion. To build the border wall as wide as he wants it to be, as long as he wants it to be, we're talking over $21 billion. And so then that doesn't even get into the detention centers that he wants to build along the southwest border, hiring more immigration judges, hiring more air and marine assets and new technology along the border. So all of that whole group of things are what he's going to need help with Congress on. And they're going to need to fund it. Whether Mexico eventually pays for any of that down the road, that's, you know, who knows what happens there. But at least immediately to hire them to get all that started, he's absolutely going to need help from Congress.
And Alan, what's your view on how this is going to play out in Congress? I mean, so far, the Republican-dominated Congress has been pretty amenable to what Donald Trump has been asking for. Is this something they're going to say yes to? What's your view on that? I mean, especially given the context the way immigration reform has sort of been stuck in idle in Congress forever.
Well, one of the reasons immigration has been stuck in Congress forever is that you had, you know, a Democratic president for a while and a Republican Congress, and so they could never agree on that balance of security and granting some form of legal status or citizenship to the undocumented immigrants living in this country. The Republicans in Congress were always pushing for a plan that would first secure the border and then at some point later deal with those 11 million undocumented immigrants living in the country. So I think the conditions are far better right now to see these kind of bills that would give money to increasing enforcement. This is basically their wish list. This is the dream that they've been looking for quite a while. Talking about most of the Republicans in Congress here, they're obviously not all of them, but it's right. The conditions are perfect for them to pass and to fund a lot of these measures. And as Trump himself has said, then at some point later, figure out what to do with those people who are still in the country.
Avi Damousavian, I'd love to ask you this. Do you expect a legal challenge or to pursue this in some way in the court system? What are you seeing down the road?
Well, we've already seen 3 lawsuits challenging parts of the Interior Enforcement Executive Order in San Francisco and Santa Clara and in Massachusetts, in Lawrence and Chelsea, Massachusetts, challenging the threat to defund so-called sanctuary cities. I think given the fact that these memos essentially outline a formula for rampant due process violations and rogue ICE behavior, NCBP behavior, we should definitely expect that there will be legal challenges to the conduct of ICE and CBP officers. And I would also say to the point about funding, you know, some of that for sure, as Alan has mentioned, would require a Congress appropriating new funding for the expansion of the detention system and the hiring of new officers and the $21.6 billion price tag on the border wall. At the same time, however, I think the evisceration of the enforcement priorities that were in place under the Obama administration, the resurrection of the Secure Communities program, and also the encouragement of localities to adopt and enter into 287G programs, which are essentially allowing for local cops to serve as roving ICE officers. And we've seen the detrimental effects of that in places like Maricopa County, Arizona, under former Sheriff Arpaio. So those types of things don't require necessarily additional funding. It's basically allowing for jurisdictions that, particularly those with a bad history of racial profiling of their community members, to really act as they wish without clear transparency or oversight. And then with respect to appropriations, I'd also say there's not a single penny that's being allocated for expanding the number of immigration judges in the courts who are going to be overburdened by the potentially huge increase in number of cases they'll be seeing, or for immigrants to have access to any legal information, let alone representation. And we've seen what an enormous difference that makes in making sure due process is served and that people have truly a fair day in court. Instead, all of that money that they're proposing would be for enforcement on steroids, essentially.
Enforcement on steroids. Avi Damousavian, stand by. I want to introduce Mark Krikorian. He's executive director of the Center for Immigration Studies, a think tank that calls for tougher enforcement of immigration law. He's written about the differences between the policies of President Obama and Trump, and you can read that on our website at onpointradio.org. Mark Krikorian, thanks for joining us. Welcome to On Point.
Thanks for having me.
I'd love to get your response to what we've been discussing today. What's your takeaway from the guidelines announced by DHS yesterday?
Really, a lot of this is, frankly, hyperventilating. I mean, the guidelines that were laid out yesterday represent a return to normal immigration enforcement. Under Obama, in effect, all illegal immigrants were presumed to be allowed to stay unless there was a special, extraordinary reason for them to be sent back to their home countries. And the memos that were released yesterday basically go back to the way immigration law was approached under President Clinton and President Bush, which is that all illegal immigrants are by definition deportable at all times, unless there's some particular reason not to remove them. So what we're talking about here is more a return to normal practice rather than some kind of departure. It was President Obama's approach to immigration enforcement that represented the radical departure from the past.
I'm sure Abid Mousavian wants to respond to that, but I have a question about that, Mark Krikorian, because when you say this is just a return to normal immigration policy, I mean, when you have a set of orders that seem to put many, many millions of people under suspicion, under the possibility of being deported, people who are just suspected of a crime, in this case, for example, is that really a return to normal,
Of course it is, because all illegal immigrants are always subject to deportation. It doesn't mean that they all get arrested and deported. They have to usually do something to bring themselves to the attention of the authorities. But why would we, how is it unusual that returning an illegal immigrant to his home country before he kills someone, if you already know that the person has gang relationships or has committed crimes, but the prosecutor has told you they had to drop the case because the evidence wasn't good enough, why would returning a person like that to his home country, which is not a criminal punishment, it's just an administrative process, why is that bad or abnormal? I mean, that's the way immigration law is supposed to work. That's the whole point of it.
Abid Mousavian, respond to that, the way immigration law is supposed to work.
I think that, as I mentioned before, I think there's widespread agreement that our immigration system is long overdue for massive reform that's humane and that's comprehensive and that really updates our current laws with the reality of our communities. And I think to say that these memos and the executive order that calls for essentially a tripling of ICE officers, an increase of 5,000 additional Border Patrol agents, an expansion, again, of the wall that would cost over $20 billion at a time when in the intervening years between the Bush administration and this current administration, we've seen an enormous spike in the number of people who are in detention. We went from 6,000 people. We went from 8,500 people in 1996 who were in the average daily population of immigration facilities to now well over 40,000 people who are in detention. So this is in the context of an already greatly enhanced immigration enforcement system and in the absence of any checks or balances for people to be able to present individualized circumstances. There's no exercise of prosecutorial discretion that's been outlined by the administration. You know, we have always said that when people present certain humanitarian factors, individual equities that would allow for them to stay, that we want to be able to give that person the opportunity to remain here. Instead, what the new memos really outline are a fast-tracking of deportation without any opportunity or meaningful ability to screen people for potential eligibility to stay here. So to say that that's normal, I would not say that, cutting off people's due process rights or placing constitutional rights in putting them in jeopardy is what we would call normal.
This is on point. Hold on a second, Mark. I just want to tell listeners that this is on point. I'm Anthony Brooks. Mark Krikorian, please go ahead and respond to that.
Due process rights for foreigners who are not U.S. citizens are what Congress says they are. This is not a criminal matter where even illegal immigrants have full constitutional rights of Miranda warnings and all the rest of it. This is an administrative matter, and Congress has explicitly authorized the kind of expedited procedures to remove people from the United States, all in the increase in, for instance, in detention capacity that Ms. Mousavian talked about was consistent through the Clinton administration and the Bush administration, and that increase in resources, also increase in Border Patrol agents, increase in fencing, all of that consistently went on for 16 years and then came to a halt under President Obama. So what we're talking about here, again, is a return to the trends that the Obama administration represented an interruption in those existing trends. And the fact is, we're never going to be able to get to the point of a more stable immigration system until the public is confident and until the reality exists that our immigration laws, whatever they are, will actually be enforced. That's the key problem in the political, the key political problem, the key reason that the President Bush's amnesty bill in 2007 failed, that President Obama's amnesty bill in 2014 failed, is that no one believes, and rightly so, no one believes the promises that we're going to enforce the law tomorrow any better than we've been enforcing it yesterday. And until that perception is changed through actual consistent enforcement, there's not going to be any political space for legalizing long-term illegal immigrants, which, frankly, most people are often reluctantly, but in my case, but are in fact for at some point.
Mark Corian, I want to just jump in here because you said a lot there. I want to get a chance to respond to it. I also want to get our listeners into this conversation. We've got a lot of them who've been waiting patiently on our line. So let's go to Louise, who's calling from Bromont, Vermont. Louise, you're on the air. It's good to have you.
Hello, and thank you, Anthony.
Yes. What's on your mind?
Yes. My message is... Yes.
Sorry, Louise. Go ahead.
Okay. My message is to all those worried immigrants out there. If you have come to North America legally and you are a law-abiding citizen and you do not commit crimes or violations of any sort, what are you afraid of? What are you hiding? I, as a Canadian, am worried sick about those suspect immigrants coming to my country. I feel President Trump needs to go even further and more strictly in order to protect us all here in North America. And to all you bleeding hearts, goody two-shoes, get on board with your president. Support him.
Okay, Louise, we hear you loud and clear. A strong message there in favor of what President Trump is going. We're going to take that on board. Take a couple more calls. Tanya is calling from Iowa City, Iowa. Tanya, please, what's on your mind?
Hello, Anthony. Thank you for taking my call. I am an immigrant. I came here in 1968 from Croatia. I got my citizenship in 1973. And I have been a small business owner all of my long years now, 25, 35 years. And I believe that all these people who are here now really should have been legal. That's fine. But I do think that that's a situation of our own making. And I think that the people that are already here need to get green cards, get documented, and then you, the government, keep track of employers like me, to make sure that all of these people's wages are reported and they are legitimate paid taxes into our government. I think that hiring all these different agents to deport people physically is stupid. I think we should all get together and just see to it that they become taxpaying citizens.
Tanya, I want to thank. Sorry, I got to jump in, Tanya, because we're coming up against a break in the program. But we hear you loud and clear, and I'm really grateful for your call. Let's try to squeeze one more in. Bob is calling from Northampton, Massachusetts. Bob, we have about 20 seconds for you. What's on your mind?
Sure. Well, Trump is not going to solve the immigration problem. There's two things he got to do. The immigration problem is caused by jobs and by social unrest in Latin America. And until we prosecute businesses that hire illegal immigrants, they're going to come because there are jobs available for them. And until we really get a handle on our drug problem, it's just going to fuel the illegal drug market in Central America, and it's going to cause a lot of social unrest. So we got to solve those two problems before we really solve our illegal immigration problem.
Securing
the border is not going to do it.
All right, Bob, we appreciate that point. So three views there from our listeners. It's a big, complex problem. We're discussing President Trump's executive orders on immigration and border security and the Department of Homeland Security guidelines unveiled yesterday that put them into practice.
Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Lift the burden of getting a home loan with Rocket Mortgage and get a secure, transparent home loan approval in minutes. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking this hour about new Department of Homeland Security guidelines unveiled yesterday that put President Trump's executive orders on immigration and border security into practice. With me is Alan Gomez, immigration reporter for USA Today, Avita Mousavian, a policy attorney for the National Immigration Law Center, and Mark Krikorian, executive director for the Center for Immigration Studies. In a moment, we're going to hear from the mayor of Austin, Texas. Mark Krikorian, before we do that, I want to ask you a really basic question. Everybody agrees this immigration system needs to be fixed. We have more than 11 million undocumented immigrants in the country. It's hard to argue that a solution is to deport them all. I know that's not what's being proposed, but how does this toughening of this crackdown on illegal immigration in this way get to the underlying problem that afflicts our immigration system? How does it do that?
Well, the question is, what is the underlying problem? For a lot of people, both on the left and the right, the underlying problem is that we have limits on immigration. In other words, that immigration should be unlimited because...
But can I throw another idea in there? I mean, I think one of the underlying problems is you've got 11 million people in this country, many of whom have been absorbed into the fabric of this society, doing productive work and good jobs. And because of mistakes that are not they're making necessarily, because of the mistakes of policymakers, they are here. And so it seems like, don't they need to be acknowledged and absorbed in some way? Bring them out of the darkness.
There's several points. First of all, there is no real darkness. I mean, illegal immigrants are on the front page of the newspaper, testifying before Congress, et cetera, number one. Number two, the fact is, it is in fact true that illegal immigrants responded to incentives that our business class and political class created, allowing them to settle here. But they are adults. They made their own decisions. They knew that they were either sneaking across a border illegally or they lied to the face of our visa officers telling them that they were going to go home when their visits were up, and they didn't. But the basic point that we somehow need to deal with the millions of illegal immigrants who are here is actually is correct. The first step to doing so is reestablishing the rule of law in immigration and reestablishing confidence, public confidence, that our immigration laws are not a joke to be ignored by businesses and by ethnic chauvinist groups that both want unlimited arrival of people from abroad. When we have restored to some significant degree the rule of law in immigration, then we can proceed to a debate about who we legalize, people who have been here a long time or have U.S.-born kids, that sort of thing. I'm actually for that. I don't like it.
But what does that mean, reestablish confidence in the rule of law? I mean, does that literally mean that more than 11 million people in America have to live in fear of being deported? I mean, is that really realistic?
They should, because they're illegal immigrants.
Okay, I got
it. They're not all going to be deported. I mean, we could easily, through either direct actual deportation or through attrition of people deciding to go home on their own because the party is over.
Mark Krikorian, I'm going to jump in. Because we've got the mayor of Austin, Texas, Steve Adler, on the line, and I want to be sure we spend some time with him. Mayor Adler, it's good to have you. Thank you for waiting patiently, and thank you for joining us on Point.
Hi, Anthony. Thanks for inviting me on.
I'd like to get you wrote an open letter to your city on February 14th saying immigration and customs enforcement raids in the community are eroding citizens' trust in law enforcement. And you can read that, listeners, by the way, on our website, onpointradio.org. Mayor Adler, give me your response on what this new day in the hard line on immigration means to your city.
Well, there's no doubt but that it's making our city less safe. Austin, Texas is one of the safest cities in the country, and the reason that we are in that place is because of the trust that's developed between our law enforcement personnel and the people who live here. And these overly broad raids at this point, I think, are eroding that trust. We do have a lot of people that are hiding. We now have witnesses that aren't going to be stepping forward, victims of crimes that are not going to be stepping forward. It's making us less safe.
Mr. Mayor, President Obama made a priority of deporting illegal immigrants who had committed serious crimes. The Trump administration has expanded that, but the thrust of the policy is to focus on people who have committed crimes or who police suspect of committing serious crimes. So in a sense, there's some, I mean, isn't it fair to argue that there is some continuity there? I mean, what has changed in a big way that worries you?
What has changed in a big way is that it's not as targeted as it had been. Under the Obama administration, they were targeting, ICE was targeting people who were criminals, and they would go after those people. What was happening in Austin with the most recent raids is ICE was not only picking up the criminal, but they were picking up the person or two or three that might be nearby or with that person. These could be people that were not criminals. And it is that overly broad nature of these raids which make them significantly different from past policy.
Mr. Mayor, what do you say to Mark Krikorian's point that really one of the problems with this broken immigration system, with more than 11 million people living in this country, essentially without the sanction of law, is that it erodes the confidence in the rule of law and that we need to address that and then we can proceed to reform the immigration system?
Well, you know, I heard the comment, and I can't tell, but I think what he said was is that once we have deported 11 million people, then we can address whether those 11 million people should be allowed to stay. But, of course, they'll be gone at that point. I think that the real issue with respect to trust is the other point that he made, which is we sent a double message for a long period of time in this country. We had our laws that concerned immigration, but at the same time we watched and even encouraged businesses to invite these immigrants into our country. They made our economy stronger. They took jobs that other people wouldn't take. Now they've been here for years. They're producing members. They're taxpayers. They're homeowners. They have children who are United States citizens. We sent a double message as a country for a long period of time, and with that, I think comes a certain measure of responsibility. Even moral responsibility.
Mr. Mayor, I know I have to let you go. I just want to ask you one more question. The president's plan, among other things, seeks to deputize state and local law enforcement officers, essentially to help and to serve as immigration officers. Lots of local police departments across the country have a big problem with this. What does the police force, your police force, or the Travis County Sheriff's Office have to say about this?
Well, I think that the position that's being taken by our local public safety professionals, our sheriff and our police, are consistent with the position taken by the Big City Police Chiefs Association, which is to say that you keep a community safe first by developing a trust relationship. And they prioritize that. They're making their prosecutorial, their discretion decisions about how they deploy their resources in a community to keep us safe. And those are the kinds of decisions that law enforcement people make all the time. And my understanding is that in this city, our law enforcement people treat criminals the same, whether they're immigrants or not immigrants, in order to keep the community safe. And we're following federal and state law in this community. But we're prioritizing those things with limited resources in those areas that will help keep us safest. And acting as federal immigration agents or federal environmental agents or federal tax agents or federal whatever agents is not the best use of the limited resources that we have.
All right, Steve Adler, he's the mayor of Austin, Texas. Mayor Adler, thank you so much for joining us today. We're very grateful to have you.
Thank you for the invitation to join.
Mark Krikorian and Avida Mousavian and Alan Gomez, stand by. I want to take a couple more calls and then return the conversation to the three of you. Jody is calling from Austin, Texas, from where we just heard the mayor.
Hey, how are you?
Hi there, Jody. What's on your mind?
I guess one of the things I'm concerned with is whether or not you agree with the issue. Is this the most cost-effective way for us to spend our money? I mean, we're talking about $20 billion to hire all these ICE agents, to increase the ability for you know, local law enforcement to help with these deportations and these arrests. We're talking about a border wall. Of all the things that we could be spending money on, is this really the priority? I mean, they're talking about these corporate tax cuts. They're talking about all these other things that they want to spend money on and increase spending on. But are these the most cost-effective ways to do that? I mean, if we're going to spend that kind of money, why wouldn't we focus on areas of crime in general? I mean, why are we specifically focusing on immigrants, whether they be illegal or legal?
Jody, we got the question.
It's hard for me to understand.
Yeah, it's a good question, and I want to put it to folks. And Alan Gomez, let me bring you back in as our immigration reporter and expert. Respond to Jody. What do you think about that kind of investment on this kind of enforcement?
Well, I think it's, again, we're talking north of $20 billion, probably quite a bit more once we factor in the cost to hire judges and detention centers. And I think the reason that we're seeing this push is, again, because this was one of the central tenets of President Trump's campaign. From the very first day that he announced, he's made this his priority throughout that campaign. So he would argue that he's just fulfilling his campaign promise and doing exactly what he promised that he would do. There are many people in this country, like Mark McCorian here, who would say that this is something that we need to absolutely get control of. And, you know, the last time there was a sort of an amnesty package that came out of Congress, then it didn't really stop people coming into the country illegally. But obviously, on the other side, there is the point that there are 11 million people here who've been here for 10, 20, 30, 66% of undocumented immigrants living in the country have been here for at least a decade. So that's the balancing act that we're seeing, and that's the sharp division that we're seeing play out around the country right now.
I'm Anthony Brooks. This is On Point. Avidu Musavian, I'd love to ask you the same question that our caller from Austin put on the table. $20 billion, do you see that? Obviously, you could imagine that being spent in other ways.
So the estimates are far greater than that. It's, by DHS's own estimate, $21.6 billion for the wall, the hiring of 5,000 additional CBP officers would be another $8.6 billion over 10 years. Again, that's not factoring in the additional hiring of ICE officers or the detention facilities that private companies are going to be eager to get the contracts for because they make money off of that. And that's all at taxpayer expense. So I think it's a great question in terms of not only is this what we want to spend on our resources on, our limited resources on, but is this the most effective way of doing what the stated goals are? And I think, you know, we've heard from the mayor of Austin, we've heard from law enforcement leaders across the country, the former DHS Secretary Jay Johnson. Many people have said going after everyone indiscriminately without any kind of parameters or guidelines or without any regard for discretionary factors makes us all less safe. And to the caller who said, for example, why would someone who's here lawfully be afraid? I'm a U.S.-born citizen. However, if I'm in a community where there's been an emboldened message that's sent to people who want to profile and who want to prey on people who might be too afraid to report crimes, and they look at me and they think that they can do that, that makes all of us less safe. So I think creating an incredibly hostile environment, and that's what happens when you deputize local cops without any kind of oversight, without any regard for what are the procedures in place and protections in place for making sure people's rights aren't violated, that's costly. And a lot of the reason that you've seen, for example, local law enforcement in over 600 jurisdictions across the country have said, for example, we're not going to hold people longer than we deem necessary for ICE enforcement purposes. And that's because they've also been subject to costly litigation that has resulted in people's Fourth Amendment constitutional rights being violated, in addition to the cost that they've incurred as localities for having to defend unjustifiable behavior. And they've said, we don't want to be complicit with ICE in violating the Constitution. So I think the costs are incalculable, you know, in terms of really understanding what it means to say we're going to do away with constitutional protections for our community members. And all that makes for a much more dangerous climate, not just in terms of law enforcement's approach towards immigrant communities, but more generally.
I want to put that question to you, Mark Krikorian, that Avida brought up, and that is the possibility or the sense, the fear of many people that there is a possibility that this new system could be abused. Where is the guarantees, or what would you argue to people that this system won't be abused, that due process will be respected?
The all law enforcement has the potential for abuse. But the fact is, that's a management issue. That you know, too sort of aggressive efforts by ICE might take place. But we are so far away from that now. I mean, if you're talking about a kind of pendulum swinging, we're actually at the far end of the pendulum swinging away from consistent enforcement. We'll cross that bridge when we get to it, if we're talking about what Ms. Mousavian would refer to as excessive enforcement. But we are years away from even contemplating that possibility. And, you know, there are several claims made here that I think really need to be addressed.
Mark, I'm going to let you address one, but we're literally up against the clock. So I'm going to give you sort of 15 seconds.
Idea that immigration enforcement makes communities less safe has been debunked repeatedly. There has been no reduction in reporting of crimes when sheriffs and police are cooperating with immigration enforcement. It's simply a false narrative that's been repeatedly been debunked by statistical.
Well, analysis. Mark Krikorian, executive director of the Center for Immigration Studies, of course, what you just said is also a source of big debate, but I appreciate you being on the show. Many thanks for joining us. Alan Gomez, immigration reporter for USA Today, thank you for your time as well.
Thank you so much.
And Avida Mousavian, attorney for the National Immigration Law Center, many thanks to you. Appreciated having you on the show.
Thank you so much.
Listeners, this is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.